Sikorsky v. City of Newburgh, and I see council is at council table ready to proceed. So I think we're ready to proceed.
Thank you, Chief Judge Livingston, and may it please the court. At issue in this appeal is one thing and one thing only: whether Sikorsky, in his less than artful complaint, pleaded a valid takings claim under the Fifth and Fourteenth Amendments. The guts of his takings claim is set out in the part of the complaint that says relief, where he says that the City of Newburgh violated his rights, quote, by retaining the surplus home equity money of his foreclosed property in excess of what was owed in property tax debt.
Counsel, may I ask, your supplemental brief appears to argue that you have a claim, your client has a claim under state law, and has a takings claim.
That's right, Your Honor.
If you have a, and when we can get into the statutory basis under the post-Tyler New York law, but
right,
if you have that available, then under Tyler, don't you not have a takings claim?
I wouldn't think so, because as I read Tyler and the Chief Justice's opinion, you have a valid takings claim on the Fifth and Fourteenth Amendment. You may have a way to bring that same takings claim in state court because New York has adopted a statute, but you wouldn't lose your federal takings claim. Now, it certainly may be the case that for matters of judicial efficiency in one thing or another, courts might decide that, look, maybe you should have these heard in state court or what have you, but you shouldn't lose the federal takings claim, because the federal takings claim is based on what the Chief Justice says in this first paragraph, where he uses a deep issue. He says, Hennepin County sold Tyler's home for $40,000 to satisfy a $15,000 tax bill. Instead of returning the remaining $25,000, the county kept it for itself. The question is whether that's a valid takings claim.
But I thought Tyler, and correct me if I'm misunderstanding it, I thought it said there must be no opportunity under state or local law for the taxpayer to recover the excess value.
But I don't think that that's been decided. Let me put it this way. And this is one of these things where I almost say, you know, we need to put our pens down every so often. I don't think that's been decided in Tyler itself. Tyler, as I read it, and I read this very tightly, I say it gives you a takings claim. Gives you a takings claim because more was taken than the state was entitled to have. It shouldn't be the situation that you then lose the federal takings claim because there's an analogous state court procedure that came along. And that's the way I read it. Now, my suggestion to the panel, of course I'm on the wrong side of the bench to say this, is that rather than go off and decide these issues, it might be best simply to say he pleaded a valid takings claim in his complaint when it was heard before the district court, and leave it at that. And then as other similar cases come along and we have much better records.
I mean, that's fine, unless to have a valid takings claim under Tyler, you don't have available a state or local law remedy.
Well, I understand that, Judge Nathan. I get that, except I read it a little differently.
You don't think is your client entitled both to a remedy under the federal constitution and under the post-Tyler state law?
The answer to that is yes. In the same way,
double recovery?
Well, it's not a double recovery. It's no different than, let's take another run-of-the-mill 14th Amendment type claim. You know, the prisoner who gets beaten up in the state correctional facility. That person has an excessive force claim. Person also perhaps has a state claim under state law. Person can bring both claims. One claim no claims, and can bring both claims if it chooses to do so. Tyler should be no different than that.
So I'm confused. You mean as a matter of stating a claim in a complaint, right?
Yes.
You want to say, I think what I understand you'd be saying, he can state a claim under the post-Tyler state law, and he could state a claim, he has stated a claim under the federal constitution.
Yes.
It's not that at the end of the day he'll be entitled to relief under both, but that for purposes of not dismissing the complaint, he has stated a claim. Is that the point?
You're doing a better job than I am, Your Honor.
So you're not contending he's entitled to double to recovery for the surplus amount, the delta between what the property sold for and the delinquent taxes, as a matter of state law and the federal constitution, such that he would be entitled to twice that amount?
No, he wouldn't be entitled to twice. He's entitled to one recovery. I see this as really no different than, you know, the prisoner beat-up case or any of these other
constitutional... in the prisoner beat-up case, as an example,
yeah,
if you have to exhaust administrative remedies, the failure to exhaust administrative remedies would mean that the claim wouldn't proceed in federal court.
That's right. But that is because on Section 7 of the Prison Litigation Reform Act says you have to exhaust your administrative remedies before you can proceed in federal court. That's a federal statute that jumps in and limits the power of the courts of the United States. Right now, we don't have that. I don't believe, Your Honor, that a fair reading of Tyler gives us anything of the equivalent to that. We just simply have a takings claim. Now, having said that, New York is not the only state that had this situation. New York's not the only state that's gone ahead and adopted similar statutes to allow you to go to state court and get your money back or get the surplus equity refunded to you.
Can I ask, under the state law, why you think there is a valid claim? As I read it, so looking at
It's tough.
Section 1197, claims for surplus.
Yeah.
And then Section 19, the structure is 1 sub A are claims that are where the property is sold from the day Tyler's decided on.
Yes.
And then 1 sub C, I think, is the relevant provision for our purposes, which says if the property is sold prior to the Tyler decision date, there's a claim can be maintained if and only if, as I read it, a claim had been initiated, an Article 78 proceeding had been initiated in state supreme prior to the Tyler date and was still pending on the date of enactment.
That's exactly what it says, Your Honor.
But so your client certainly had a federal claim that meets those requirements, but under the language of the statute, it seems to require, and maybe it's just a gap, but it seems to require an Article 78 in state supreme, which I think everybody concedes in your papers was not the case.
Of course, but I don't think that's the proper analysis. And I say that having thought about this, I go back to my law school teacher in federal courts, he used to always say there are two keys of the courthouse. One is the Constitution and the other is a federal statute. His point was that there were no other keys to the courthouse and that if there was a valid claim under state law, that the state couldn't say to you, you must only bring this case, your claim in the town of Newburgh, city court or whatever. Because if it's a claim that otherwise fits within the jurisdiction of a court of the United States, you can bring it there, and all of these provisions that attempt to cabin them and say, well, you can only go to wherever, simply don't cut off the jurisdiction of a court of the United States.
So what are we applying? Are we applying constitutional law or the state statute?
I think they both apply, Your Honor. Both of them apply.
Under your theory.
Under my theory.
Theory, we have jurisdiction and we keep it.
That's right. But
then the question is, if is it a takings under Tyler, if it's not, if Title doesn't apply because now there's a state provision, do we dismiss the case, or do we keep the case and rule as a matter of state law to avoid the constitutional question?
Judge Walker, I'm not sure I follow you, and that's on me, obviously. But my thought is, and again, I'm on the wrong.
What do you want us to do?
I want a one-paragraph summary order that says the judgment of the district court is reversed and the case is remanded for further consideration in light of Tyler and state statute, and that's it. Now, I get you, most lawyers who come up here want these long opinions. No, no, no. That's not what we need to do here. We need to have a short order that simply flips it. And you think of it this way. Let's assume that Tyler was decided after the district court's decision. You would simply vacate, remand for consideration in light of Tyler, and that would be the end of it. Here you have the unfortunate situation in which, for whatever reason, the district court just missed it. I don't know why the district court missed it. Probably imagine when you were a law clerk, you know, your job was to find these things and make sure you didn't miss them. But for whatever reason, missed it. So when you come to the Court of Appeals, you say, look, we're going to reverse it because it's wrong. We're going to go back and apply Tyler. And by the way, we now have this New York statute. And to pick up Judge Nathan's point, if you think that recovery is only available under one or the other, then you would say, okay, sort it out. I don't think that's correct, but I don't think, you know, again,
what
I'm making...
If the district, we send it back and the district court says, okay, the state statute applies, dismissed. I don't do state statutes.
Well, but that's not the case. You do also do state statutes. We hear state claims in the courts of the United States all the time.
Yeah.
If it's a, you know, it typically would be supplemental jurisdiction in a situation like this. You have a valid federal court claim. Therefore, you can bring under 1369 any other claim that is for a purpose of Article 3, one case.
State claims and federal claims are brought in federal court, come up to us, and we don't rule on the federal question, or we dismiss it, and there's still something left. We might just send it back to the state court. We should just decline to exercise supplemental jurisdiction.
Well, except
but
here,
that's not what you want.
No.
The district court to
can't exercise. Go back to state court.
Well, that's right. There's no state court to go back to.
Right.
Yeah,
so this is not a situation where you've removed the case,
and you
can go back to the district court and say, "All right, look, the federal claim is gone."
But
they clearly can't bring a claim in state court now, right?
That's exactly right.
Is that because of the statute of limitations?
Well, no, it's not because of limitations.
Because of the way the statute's written.
It's the way the statute's written.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, it's not limitations, because the limitations period should really run from the sale of the house, which is June 2021, because that's when the gain is realized. I mean, there's a lot going on until you get to June 2021, but that's when the gain is realized. If you look in the complaint, that's alleged in the timeline in paragraph 20. Gain is realized, okay. That point would be your limitations period.
If we were to give instructions following the route that you say, it's a one-paragraph summary order, would we give instructions to the district court to do anything? Or just say, you know, you figure it out?
Well, you know, I'm a great believer in letting district courts figure things out.
Mm-hmm.
And I say that with all respect for the Court of Appeals. But, you know, usually if you're right there with the parties and the lawyers, you have a lot better grasp of what's going on and what can we do.
But sometimes district courts want guidance, and it seems like, you know, kicking the can on the hard questions doesn't give much guidance to the district court.
Judge Nathan, I couldn't agree with you more. And that's a very important role of a United States Court of Appeals, is to provide guidance for the district courts within the circuit. No question. The difference here is that this is a first appeal on a very, shall I say, thin record. There are other cases percolating and coming up, and we'll be here eventually. And why not wait for a much better case, and then we can give the district courts guidance? And I understand that's not always the reaction of most circuit judges, but sometimes you know, saying little less does a lot more. And then when another case comes up from some other district somewhere, and there are, I don't know, more than a handful of these around, probably 20 or 30 of these cases now in the different districts, at that point, the court will have a much fuller record with something that's briefed much better than the district court. I mean, there was a recent opinion by Judge Engelmeyer, very good opinion. I don't believe it's appealable because he just denied someone's motion, so there's no 1291 final judgment. But, you know, as a my position is, short order, send it back with the district court.
I mean, just to test your how wedded you are to that. Another option would be that there's not to conclude because there wasn't a state claim pending at the time. There's not an available state court remedy. And under Tyler, there's a taking.
There is a taking right. Under Tyler. That's,
and
that's,
so vacate and remand to the district court for the that is to say that the taking claim ought not to have been dismissed. It was dismissed in error in light of Tyler.
That's right. I would say, and this goes again back to my federal courts class. I still don't believe that a state can create a cause of action or a claim and set it up in such a way that it can't be brought in a court of the United States.
I don't think it's a jurisdiction issue.
You
I
don't.
Think you have federal court, you have subject matter jurisdiction because you have a plausible takings claim.
Of course.
But the question as to the viability of that takings claim turns on, one reading of Tyler is that it turns on the availability or lack of availability of a state law process.
Right.
And that is just a creature of state law. That's a state statutory interpretation question, which we could either answer, we could certify, we could send it back to the district court to do in the first instance. All of those end up at the same place. Somebody has to answer, I think, whether a federal claim pending otherwise under the statute is sufficient to allow your client to proceed under state law. And if not, then I think he has a takings claim. But that's how the argument would go.
Well, let me give you kind of a different twist on this. Instead of looking at it as a supplemental jurisdiction type claim with a federal claim, let's assume for a moment that you had diversity jurisdiction and someone brought this claim in a court of the United States saying, look, yeah, my house is here, and forget for a moment about the local item exception to the federal courts. It's a court-made exception. It says, look, I've got this claim under state law, and yeah, it says it had to have been brought in state court in a special proceeding, which is very specific, but I brought my case in federal court under the diversity jurisdiction saying you took more than you were owed, than you were owed. Can you pitch that? And I think the answer to that's no. I think the answer to that is no, that the state cannot. And I mean, and this is something, you know, you could write on for sure, but the state cannot require that a claim be brought in a specific court. It can only say there's a claim, and after that, it's up to the Constitution and up to Congress whether you can bring that claim in a court of the United States. And if it fits in under some jurisdictional piece, you're there. And all the stuff about you have to do this, that, in the state system can't work. And frankly, I don't want to make it sound like the courtroom will fall down, but to me, that's a real core provision here. And I understand you're looking at, no, the statute itself doesn't apply, so we don't get to that bigger issue. And I understand that, but I do think the bigger issue is there, that even though the wording of the statute taken literally means you have to have a special proceeding going, that now that's not really the case. So.
And at any rate, what you are saying would be your recommendation would be to send it back saying a takings claim has been plausibly pled. The plaintiff may wish to amend the complaint to add a state claim we don't express a view on that. Leave that to the district court in the first instance.
Yeah, I mean, I don't, look, as I say, I'm on the wrong side of the bench, but I'm not trying to save you work, but sometimes the less we say, the more we do on these kinds of things. And recognize this case as simply a mistake that the district court made and a situation in which it's best to go back, send it back, and see what happens after it gets back. And there'll be other, Your Honor, there'll be other cases. you can
have that sense.
There'll be other cases here, and you don't need to use this one. And I don't mean if I'm saving work for you or your law clerks, but I do think that's a better answer on this. Thank you very much, Your Honor.
Thank you.
May it please the court, Michael Burke on behalf of the city of Newburgh. Good afternoon, Your Honors. This is not a takings case. And as we set forth in our briefs, this is where there was a foreclosure in 2012. The city provided an opportunity for a repurchase agreement to be entered. That was done in 2014. The plaintiff appellant breached that repurchase agreement. So where I agree,
why does that obviate all of the, or somehow trump the fundamental question about whether there's takings here?
Because, Your Honor Walker, this is there's a new contract with new provisions in that contract and new obligations on the parties in that contract, and
how does that solve the constitutional issue?
Well, there, the city said, you can, if you meet your obligations here, the city didn't say, pay us for the surplus that's of the property. You merely have to pay us the taxes owed.
Could the city have said, pay us for the surplus of the property?
I believe they could if you want to say that this was a takings. If you're saying, they didn't.
They had title, which entitles them to what?
They have title to property, which entitles them then to resell the property.
Yeah, and what?
And either keep the surplus or, well,
that's
framework.
That's the problem right there.
That's
the
problem.
You're not entitled to keep the surplus. That's a taking.
That's a takings, but when it's a repurchase agreement where there are terms to the repurchase agreement and they provided the opportunity, and this is what Tyler says, and this is what
Nick. So you're saying it's contract language specific, right? That
correct.
Basically what the plaintiff promised was, give me more time. And if I don't meet that, you get the surplus value of my property in addition to what you're owed under the taxes.
What I'm saying is
another. Is that the contention?
No, the contention is that they waived their, you had the foreclosure action, and that the repurchase agreement is in essence a waiver of the takings claim back in 20.
Where does it, is that a contract language claim that it's a waiver of the takings claim?
It's a contract language claim, and it's
and
also.
What language is should we look at to see the waiver?
The language in the contract itself.
Right.
So, which
so
is
specific. Got it in front of me.
It doesn't say that it's waived. It says that these are the terms, and if you don't meet the terms, then you're in breach, in essence, and that's what happened here.
And then what is the question?
And then what is the title remains in the city. They could either hold on to the title,
yeah,
or they could sell the property.
Right. And
but that's not it. That's the Tyler case.
How is that a waiver? How is it a waiver when they can still have the property, they could sell it, and then you're just saying they can that the other side has waived the right to a to pursue the excess funds?
What I'm saying is that, and this is what the Nick case, Nick versus Town of Scott, and the judge down below said in citing the
Nelson.
Dorsey case, which is a district court case, but nonetheless, he said when there's an adequate avenue for recovering surplus equity, which is what we had here, which is what the repurchase agreement was, then there is no takings. And that case is still good law. There's the case that here you had an adequate avenue for recovering the surplus. And that was the problem with Tyler, is they said there was no adequate.
Yeah, but that's just like saying if you pay the delinquent taxes, you get to keep the property. And therefore, you have an adequate mechanism to get the surplus. Tyler expressly rejects that argument. And it seems to me it's precisely the same as the position here.
But it's not, Your Honor. The difference being is that you had the foreclosure had been already done, and they gave the property owner the opportunity to just pay back what was owed in the repurchase agreement. So it reset the obligations of the parties, and it wasn't a foreclosure action under the typical framework that's set forth for foreclosure actions. So he had that opportunity, as Nick versus the Scott Township said, to obtain the surplus. He needed to pay what was owed, and
he didn't. He had the opportunity to get the title back from the city, right?
Which in turn would be...
That's what the contract says. It's for the property.
They would give back the quitclaim deed. Correct. Right.
So the city's saying, pay pursuant to the schedule, you get the title back.
Right.
Now, I think the city could have contracted and said, and if you don't meet that, you forego any right to the surplus value of the property beyond the delinquent tax amount. I think that could plausibly have been written into the contract, but I just don't see that language here.
But the point being is, here you had the parties, there was no, he had that opportunity, as Scott says, and as I reiterated, that avenue to obtain, and that's the difference with Tyler, and where I agree with my adversary of, you know, wait for a better case. The circuit should wait for a better case. That's squarely a foreclosure action, not an action that was a repurchase agreement among the parties, where he had that avenue, that opportunity to afford himself to meet the prior tax obligations that were owed and get the title back.
The bottom of the case is the reason that there are questions about your argument is that why should New York get the surplus under any set of equitable considerations? You get paid your taxes, not New York, Newburgh. You get paid your taxes. That's what you're concerned about. And anything extra is a windfall for you, and unjustified windfall. And therefore, it ought to go back to them. Now, go back to Sikorsky. So how? You know, why should we construe this in your favor to achieve a result that is so inequitable?
Well, on the equities, Your Honor, New York State has now enacted the statutes that Judge Nathan spoke about, right, as far as that it's not going to retroact. Because how far back do you go? This was 2012, 13 years ago that he defaulted on his tax obligations. And the city is not in a position. They attempted to work through and provide him the opportunities, but when does it get to the point?
That's a statute of limitations question.
Correct.
Not a constitutional takings question.
It's a statute of limitations, and I believe, Your Honor, because they had, and the cases say this, and I've said it before, so I don't want to continue to reiterate, because he had the avenue, the opportunity to get back the full surplus value through this repurchase agreement and breach that, then he's out of luck on the contract, on the repurchase agreement.
If the contract had said, you get this extra time, here's the schedule, and if you don't meet it, we keep the property and we get to resell it. But just to be clear, we don't mean that we're entitled in some way to the surplus value in the house. Would you be entitled to the surplus value in the house? Because he had an opportunity to get it in some way?
Would the breaching party be entitled to the surplus?
Would the city be entitled in the face of a breach? So exactly, yeah, what happens
in
here.
In the face of the breach, there... And that's where the example is.
So even if the contract said, to be clear, we don't mean that we get the city get to keep any surplus value.
Well, if it said that, then I would agree with Your Honor. No, they wouldn't be allowed to. But the language.
So it's a contract language question. Even though he had an opportunity to get the full surplus value back, right?
Right, and
if he had paid pursuant to the schedule,
which he did not, and I don't think there's any question.
Which he wasn't able to do, but why does that foreclose him from trying to seek the surplus any other way he possibly can?
Well, Your Honors, anytime there's a breach, you have contracting parties, and if there's a breach, the terms of the contract, where we will turn over title, and then you'll have the opportunity to either retain the equity in it, to use the equity, to take a second. He didn't meet his obligations, which then would have led to the city turning it back over. So this isn't your classic foreclosure.
But then the contract says what happens if, correct, he doesn't meet it. What does it say?
In the contract here?
Yeah.
It just says that they can cancel the contract. And he didn't meet the obligations by July of 2016. In March of 2017, he still hadn't met that obligation, and they canceled the contract because he didn't meet the terms of it in paying the
That's why the city gets the property.
That's why the city gets the property. But the reverse of that is the city gets the property. They're not in the business of wanting. They're not in the business at all of this. They want their constituents to pay their taxes when they're due. And that clearly wasn't happening here. So there's a mechanism in place to say, well, what can they do? Now, we just finished a case for the city of Newburgh where they had to take a piece of property that was abandoned, disheveled, and they took it, they knocked it down. It turned out it was connected. There was beams connecting it between the two neighboring properties where the engineer didn't realize that these beams were connecting it. And they got sued by the two neighboring properties for this abandoned property that they had taken because the owner failed. So that property actually cost the city a lot of money. It wasn't something where there was a windfall.
So no surplus. What is that?
No surplus, actually a liability. So I think that merely to say here the city's trying to cash in on a windfall, that's not what they're doing here. They're trying to enforce the law that he failed to abide to.
You've just given an example without a windfall to say that they're not after a windfall here. And
but,
if grandma had wheels, she'd be a bicycle.
I just wanted to point to a recent example, Your Honor, of where the city is not in the business of taking people's property. It's they're obligated to maintain under the code provisions for building and zoning issues that could be a danger. They had to take that property. Turns out it wasn't worth very much, and it actually then cost them money when they tried to demolish it. So the point being is that merely because this instance there was a surplus doesn't mean that the city, what they did here was wrong. They had a contract with the party. He didn't meet his end of the bargain in paying what was owed. And as I said, they didn't require, oh, by the way, we want a kicker or a bit more for you to pay us if you want that surplus back.
Can I ask you a question about the statute of limitations? Yeah. If there's a foreclosure and the city has title but hasn't sold the property yet, can the former homeowner bring, do they have a ripe claim to bring for a taking? I guess you could answer it as to the state law question too. Can they bring a claim before there's been a sale of the property? Under the new state statutory scheme or under the federal constitution?
I believe the answer is it's not ripe until there's actually a sale of the property. I think that's the answer. And we did just deal with that before Judge Seibel, another action ironically from the city of Newburgh, but that was the answer there, and I'm sticking with my answer.
It's a good thing to be consistent.
your
view of the state law?
Yes.
How do you read the state law requirement do you read it as I suggested in my questions to your colleague, that it has to be an Article 78?
I do. I read that it's from May of 2023 forward, and then the other subsection 1C, there has to be a pending Article 78. It's got to be in I don't want to call pipeline because the pipeline.
So let's say you had somebody who just hadn't brought, so the property sold their surplus value prior to Tyler, and then Tyler's decided, and they just hadn't brought a state law claim or any claim prior to that. Do they have an available state law remedy?
Well, the statute of limitations on Article 78.
Not a statute of limitations problem. Let's say the property sold the day before Tyler's decided.
Okay. The day before, they could still go before the state court and bring an Article 78. So
they can. How can they do that?
Well, I didn't understand that the hypothetical, Your Honor.
So as I read the 1197 section 19 sub 1A, if the property had been sold on or after May 25th, 2023, which is the date of Tyler,
okay,
that provision applies. So in my hypo, we're potentially under C, which says where a property sold prior to May 25th, 2023. So in my hypo, it sold prior to May 25th, 2023, but no claim anywhere had been brought.
Then they cannot.
And the statute of limitations had not run.
Then they cannot bring an action.
They're out of luck.
They're out of luck.
And so then if the, do they, can they bring, so it's a, there's a gap in the statute.
There's a gap, or yeah, and perhaps they, or New
and
York
then, and then
considered that and didn't want to retroactively apply it, you know, to say we have to draw a
and
line
so
somewhere.
So if they bring a claim then under the Constitution for a taking, no repurchase agreement or anything, and just there, and there's no state law remedy available in this post-Tyler scheme, as we've just said, they've stated a claim for a taking now.
They, if it was a, all things aside, it's timely as the court.
Yes.
Then they would have stated a claim for a constitutional claim for a taking. Yes, I don't disagree with that, but that's not what we have here. And as I've said in my brief, this is
the only difference between what we have. So again, setting the repurchase agreement aside, assume I disagree with you on that.
Okay.
But in terms of what we have here, the only difference between that hypo and this hypo is that Mr. Sikorsky had brought a federal claim. And so I think, unless you think that would meet this requirement, Mr. Sikorsky also would have stated a claim because he doesn't have a state law remedy available to him.
Well,
I understand you, and I'm not trying to trick you with respect to the repurchase agreement argument. I understand that's the primary argument. I'm just saying, assume I disagree with you on that. I want to understand what the effect of the state law, the new state law is.
Well, there's a little more procedural history here where he did bring a state claim that we argued about, you know, the res judicata effect there, and that was
before
also
before the sale.
What's that?
Before the sale of the property.
Correct. Yeah. Correct.
And you, and it, so it wasn't, wouldn't be ripe.
It wouldn't be ripe, but they, yes, and there was other claims about, you know, his status as a veteran and everything else was dealt with on the state level, and then we argued obviously res judicata here. So the facts as the court presents them there, he would have a takings, as I answered earlier. However, that's not what we have here. As I've said, you know, this is not a case where Tyler should be applied. There are other cases that are in the pipeline, and again, to not use the pipeline as we're using it for the other retroactivity, that the court can decide, but this is not the one. This is not one where it is a straight foreclosure action. This is a repurchase agreement where the city did provide the avenue for a remedy where the courts have said, in the Supreme Court case, as I said, Nick, it's still good law, that you provide that that avenue, it's not a takings. Thank you.
May it please the court, Matthew Nothnagel in the office of the Orange County Attorney. Pro se litigants, like everyone else, must plead sufficient facts to state a claim that's plausible on its face, no matter how inartful the complaint might be. And once the appellant started pleading actual facts of the case on page 19 of the city's supplemental appendix, there's nothing there about the county. Nothing there about the county, any county involvement in the foreclosure, the post-foreclosure proceedings.
I don't understand counsel to be continuing to argue that there's a claim against the county. I suppose that would have been a question better addressed to...
He never argued that there's a claim against the county, but he did argue for a full remand of the entire...
So you would say whatever happens with the city, and I think you think the claim proceeds against the city, but you would say it doesn't matter... The dismissal of the claim against the county should be affirmed.
Yes, that's correct, Your Honor. And there's nothing, nothing in this entire record that suggests the county is liable for anything. And I didn't hear anything in oral argument either to that effect. So I will, if Your Honors have no further questions, I'll be happy to simply rely on the submissions that we've made.
Thank you. Mr. Cole, should the dismissal against the county be affirmed?
I think in fairness, the answer to that is yes. But let me suggest this. It's a little unusual procedural posture in the sense that it was a joint motion decided by one order that granted it.
We have the ability to affirm in part.
I certainly agree. You certainly do. It's unfortunate, I think, that it wasn't a little cleaner in the district court in terms of this is granted for this reason and this is granted for that reason. But you take the record as it comes, but I think, Judge Nathan, that's exactly correct, that you would affirm in part and reverse in part in that sense, as far as the County of Orange is concerned. But let me focus on just a couple of things, including one thing I think you said, and that is that getting the property is not the same thing as the surplus. And that could not be more true here. And I know there's a lot of talk about this foreclosure was a long time ago and a lot of this and that that happened between the foreclosure and when the property was finally sold in June of 2021. And then that brings up this limitations issue. Now, first thing I think we need to look at is the district court did not decide any limitations issues here. Punt it on it, let it go. And again, I'm going to make the same point I made before, that with the district court not having weighed in on that, that maybe it's best for this court to put the pen down when it comes to limitations. Having said that, if you look at Tyler, again, go back to the Chief Justice's first paragraph, and he talks about instead of returning the remaining $25,000, it kept it for itself. The question is whether this constitutes a taking. It's that when you have a sale and you don't refund the excess, that's the taking. That's when the claim.
That's the moment at which the cause of action accrues.
I think that's the fairest reading of Tyler, Your Honor.
What would happen, though, if the city took the property, and we forget again, let's set aside the arrangement, the contract. But what if they had just taken the property and neglected to sell it?
You know, it's interesting. When I was coming up here, I said, you know, I'll bet I'll get that question. Because what do you do in that situation? City takes the property and says, you know what? We got your house, and we're not doing anything with it. I've got to think that there's a practical answer to that, that at some point it effectively becomes a taking. It's not a taking right away, but at some point it becomes a constructive taking. And I think that's the only answer for it. That's interesting enough, not really presented here. I think that was all the points I had, limitations, so forth. Yeah. Oh, and Judge Nathan, I think you're spot on when it comes to the contract. Again, it's a lot of interesting stuff over there. But
you think the city could have contracted to retain the surplus value basically in exchange for more time to pay?
Interesting question. I would think that somebody might litigate whether the terms were such that, you know, it might be overreaching or something like that. But I suspect at some point, I mean, think of it this way. I thought about it this way. I said, how about the situation where you have a police officer who unlawfully arrests somebody and puts them in jail? What do? You let them out, you get them to sign a release. and then you say, all right, I'm okay now. Well, that's kind of what that is. It's not, if they did it. Now, they didn't do that. But your point is, could you effectively sign a release and thereby let the city out of jail for taking the property? Now, I suspect the answer is kind of yes, but that's not this case. And again, there are other cases coming along, and sometimes we do more by saying less. I'll leave it at that. And thank you all for being such a great panel.
Thank you all, and thank you for the help with this matter.
Yes, thank you.
We very much appreciate it.